It is Tuesday, July 2nd, 2013, and from the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. Support for KUAF comes from the Fayetteville Underground, promoting the visual arts in Northwest Arkansas, supporting artists working to the highest standards, and contributing to the advancement of Fayetteville as a destination city for the arts. Information regarding art shows, concerts, and more available at FayettevilleUnderground.com.
Head on Ozarks, the tightrope the town of Eureka Springs sometimes must negotiate when it comes to businesses and residences. Jacqueline Froelich has that story. Plus, Sanjay Gupta, the medical correspondent on CNN, was in Arkansas last week and sat down with Roby Brock to talk about the role of medical journalism and what a change in healthcare may mean for Arkansas.
We also examine what last week's Supreme Court decision regarding the Voting Rights Act means for the state.
First, home sales are up by 10% in Arkansas, according to a report from the Arkansas Realtors Association. The number of homes sold increased by 10% from May of last year to May of this year. Bill Olson, president of the Arkansas Realtors Association, says this is a good thing for buyers.
The market is still really good. Our interest rates are still low. Interest rates are going up. So right now, it's still a very good time to purchase a property because, you know, historically, interest rates have never been this low before.
And what does this mean for people looking to sell their homes?
Your real estate market is local. So, you know, contact a local realtor in your area to come talk about the valuation of your property. Properties in Arkansas historically have not appreciated a great deal as they have in other states. So therefore, we don't see the huge drops in home prices like we do in other areas.
The full report may be found online at ArkansasRealtors.com.
As people in the state begin paying a half cent more in sales tax for the improvement of roadways, highway officials say the new revenue will not completely address their funding needs. Randy Ort, spokesman for the State Highway and Transportation Department, says the increase is expected to provide the department with $230 million in additional yearly revenue.
But that is not a solution. The half-cent sales tax has never been promoted as a solution. It is simply a way for us to address some of our most expensive and our most pressing critical needs right at this time.
The half-cent increase will expire in 10 years. Ort says his department must find additional sources of revenue. Around 80% of highway funding comes from sales of gasoline and diesel, he says, but drivers are consuming less fuel, which is steadily decreasing revenue numbers.
The Fort Smith Fire Department honored one of its own yesterday. Captain Joey Sport received the department's Medal of Valor for putting his own life on the line to rescue a child from a utility shaft at Immaculate Conception Elementary School. Fire Chief Mike Richard says that the shaft was about 30 feet deep with only a roughly 13-inch wide opening at the top.
Captain Sport, he's captain now, had to be lowered by rope in a harness down into that shaft to retrieve the child and then hold that child, secure that child enough that he could be brought back up. The fit was so tight that not the full complement of safety gear that we would normally use for both the child and himself to bring him back up because there just wasn't room for it. So he put himself at great risk to be lowered down that hole to retrieve the child.
Chief Richard says the Medal of Valor is issued to firefighters who go above and beyond the call of duty, generally putting themselves at great personal risk to save people or property. He couldn't remember how many firefighters have been honored with the Medal of Honor, but he guessed fewer than 10 have been honored, as the Medal of Valor program has only been in place for a few years.
We didn't have it before, and we thought that we needed to implement that with some other ceremony procedures that we haven't done in the past. And the first year, we actually went back and picked up some firefighters in previous years that was well documented that deserved it, that might even have retired by now, and made those presentations, and then actually started this procedure moving forward, like I said, about 2-3 years ago.
A committee determines who receives the Medal of Valor, a decision Chief Richard says was given in the case of Captain Sport. Because Sport was being promoted to captain yesterday, Chief Richard says it was an opportune time to award him the medal.
Arkansas's U.S. Senate contingent, along with Congressmen Womack and Crawford, yesterday announced more than $3 million in Federal Aviation Administration grants for safety and operations improvements. The lion's share of the money will go to the Fort Smith Regional Airport, which will receive nearly $2.5 million to continue rehabilitation to the taxiway at the airport.
If you frequent downtown Fayetteville near the University of Arkansas campus, you're probably already used to construction zones, but beginning next week, you can expect more orange construction barrels and detours. The city of Fayetteville announced yesterday Leverett Avenue will be closed between Maple and Cleveland Streets between the work hours of 7 and 5 starting Monday. The closure will allow city crews to replace sidewalks, curb and guttering, and the asphalt overlay. Sidewalks will be upgraded to the current 5-foot city standard. Curbs and guttering are being replaced to improve drainage flow, and the driving surface of the street will be milled and replaced. The work is expected to last 8 weeks.
The 2014 general election is still more than a year away, yet several statewide races are heating up. Yesterday, the Arkansas Attorney General race gained a primary challenge as Leslie Rutledge, a Little Rock attorney, announced her intention to run as a Republican for the office currently held by the term-limited Dustin McDaniel, a Democrat. Rutledge formerly served as legal counsel for the Republican National Committee and for former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. David Sterling, another attorney from North Little Rock, has also announced his plans to run as a Republican for Attorney General. So far, no Democrat has announced candidacy for the office.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals closed out a 6-game homestand at Arvest Ballpark last night. The Nats lost to the Frisco Rough Riders 7-4. The Naturals did win 4 of the 6 games on that homestand. They'll have tonight off, but continue with 6 games on the road beginning tomorrow. That opens up with a 3-game set against the Midland Rockhounds in Texas.
Tonight, mostly clear with lows from 52 in northwest Arkansas to 60 in the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny tomorrow with highs in the mid-80s. And tomorrow night, partly cloudy with lows from 56 in northwest Arkansas to 62 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. When you think of a resort, you might imagine an idyllic place inhabited by a large population of tourists served by dedicated staff. Some perceive the city of Eureka Springs as a resort, but many also call it home. The historic Victorian Village has a national reputation as a prime Ozarks vacation spot, but it's also begun to lose population. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, tourism is dislocating residents, and some are determined to maintain a grip.
In 2000, Eureka Springs counted 2,278 residents. In 2010, the population dropped by nearly 10% to just over 2,000. The bulk of residents are predominantly white and aging. Most are settled comfortably in refurbished historic homes. Most of the towns listed on the National Register of Historic Places, much of it constructed in the late 1800s and early 20th century. And many of the current residents, like realtor Joe McClung, data show, arrived here more than 40 years ago, when large chunks of downtown Eureka was abandoned, crumbling limestone facade.
We bought the building location, which was a burnout building at 43 Spring Street that had trees growing in the middle of it. And next door, we bought that. It was a shack structure on it at 45 Spring Street with a big parking lot. And those buildings burned, I think, in 1932.
The McClungs are originally from Walnut, Kansas, but are considered by some to be an institution in Eureka Springs. Having staked an early claim on the town's real estate, Joe McClung owns a lot of commercial rental property up on the highway, as they call it, as well as half a dozen buildings in downtown Eureka, including the much-photographed Flatiron Building.
We don't have any slum areas. We don't have, you'll see maybe a lawn that should have been mowed yesterday, but basically people take great pride in their neighborhoods.
He's seated in his office on Prospect and Singleton, a building that once served as Eureka's first neighborhood grocer circa 1880. All the fixtures are gone, but the shelves and cabinets that line the long, narrow room are filled with antique toys. McClung collects artifacts and real estate.
I can remember buying properties like the place across the street from my office here. I sold it for $8,000, and it was a fourplex, and it's still being rented today. It's for sale, I think, for $189,000.
Eureka Springs has a finite amount of land on which to build, situated along two long, steep ridges of Ozark Mountain. Last count, according to the U.S. Census, Eureka has 1,323 total housing units. Of those, 254 are vacant. For sale signs are posted everywhere on both homes and commercial properties post-recession. But here, prices are artificially inflated. Even Joe McClung has quit purchasing homes to rent.
Because we get so much money for our properties, I couldn't find tenants that could pay the rent.
Resident Ann Armstrong serves as Eureka Springs City Clerk. She claims a dearth of rental property exists, especially for working poor who service Eureka's tourist economy, claiming as many as 800 are forced to commute every day. And what is available for rent is really high.
I mean, there are people who have two and three jobs just to be able to afford to live in this lovely little town.
It started back in the late 1980s when bed and breakfast establishments began to displace residents. Some B&B owners snapped up parcels of rundown historic homes, fix up into tourist accommodations. By 2001, the city banned any new ones in the downtown historic district. But in recent years, residents found a new way around the law.
Because of a particular loophole in the way the code was written, the door to weekly rentals was opened.
Weekly rentals not for residents, but to transient guests. Far exceeds any monthly rental payment. Last year, Eureka Springs City Council introduced an ordinance to control weekly rentals, but it failed to pass. A freshly proposed city ordinance, 2184, will make it a misdemeanor to house transient guests for less than 31 days, punishable by a fine of up to $500 per violation. Approved at its second reading by City Council, it's expected to pass the final round July 8th. Less than a dozen residents operate weekly rentals currently, the city clerk said. Ann Armstrong said no data exists on the wide spectrum of residential and tourist accommodations in town. Still, even more restrictions are being discussed.
There's a movement afoot right now about having multifamily dwellings get business licenses.
We're talking apartment complexes. But any talk of regulating multifamily dwellings angers Bill King. He operates four single-family rentals, a duplex, and this funky apartment complex uptown. We follow King along a back porch walkway to meet one of his tenants.
Okay, who's lived in Eureka Springs and struggled to find housing, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
How hard was it for you to find a place?
It's pretty hard. It's very expensive. Very expensive.
That's Dawn Sexton. Her apartment is small but tidy, just a kitchen and living quarters where she sleeps. She works at a local restaurant a few blocks away and loves being nearby. But even though he could, King's not asking for higher rents.
Oh, they're very in demand. I don't ever advertise them anymore. I just wait for someone to call me, which usually takes about a day. As soon as something's available, people hear about it and I'm getting calls.
King hopes to purchase another complex just down the street, which has stood empty for 7 years, but is getting flack from the neighbors who claim his apartments are rundown and noisy.
All of my properties are in better shape than they were when I bought them. I'm not a wealthy man. I am trying to provide a service to the community by providing affordable housing. I start at the inside and work out because I've learned through experience. As far as the rowdy tenants, I haven't had a rowdy tenant in a few years now. You learn. In the neighborhood where my multifamily property is and where I'm trying to buy another one is supposedly a residential neighborhood, but it's got really more empty houses belonging to people who live out of state or B&Bs than it has anything else, or houses on the market. There's really very few people actually living there. And part of what I'm trying to do is repopulate Eureka Springs.
He worries that a push to require business licenses for multi-purpose dwellings like his is a means to levy more taxes, making rental housing even less affordable. Still, it's a common practice. For example, Fayetteville requires landlords that rent more than three residential units to be licensed. Eureka Springs Planning Commissioner Chair Beverly Blankenship said her colleague Ed Leswick introduced the concept.
Our job as city officials is to preserve and protect, and I think that the gist of it is he wants to make sure that the multifamily units are pretty much like apartments. It's three or more families living in a unit, and he just wants to make sure that they're safe.
Beverly Blankenship insists there are plenty of spaces to rent, which was confirmed by an innkeeper who contacted us for this report, saying landlords are creating a network to reach out to prospective renters. But David Hager, who operates Sparky's Roadside Cafe for 18 years, says his workers rarely find housing in town.
My wife and I came here in 85, and back then, when we were just starting out, we were 25 years old, you could find rental houses, apartments, all over town for that you could afford for wages, for kitchen wages and restaurant wages and waitress wages. Nowadays, there are so few younger people moving to town because they can't afford to live in town. There's a few apartment areas and a few trailer parks, but they go really quickly, and they're also kind of pricey for what they are.
As for longtime realtor Joe McClung, who knows every nook and cranny of this town, he's observing a new trend some might consider ominous.
We've seen a pretty good influx of retired executives from Walmart and Tyson come to this town and invest a lot of money in their second homes.
Joe McClung said as much as 15% of Eureka's residential real estate could be classified as vacation homes. Joe McClung Sr. plans to renovate the ancient Victorian apartment adjacent to his office quarters and turn the place over to his grandkids. That way, the McClung clan will have a place in Eureka Springs called home. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Tis the season.
Tis the season.
To announce your season.
Tis the season.
In just the last 24 hours or so, we've had several seasons announced, including just this morning, the University of Arkansas Fort Smith announcing their Season of Entertainment 33 schedule. It's this is often UAFS Choral, mm-hmm. UAFS Jazz Band, the theater mm-hmm. at UAFS, as well as touring productions.
Right.
Just the highlights
yes.
include UAFS Symphonic Band opening the Season of Entertainment on October 14th, theater at UAFS production of Lend Me a Tenor in late October, a couple of weekend dates there, and national touring productions including Memphis and Man of La Mancha.
Excellent. Another group announcing their season, New Threshold Theater. They started, I guess, their first production was in January, so they
yes.
had a shorter season this year. Their first season only had two pieces, but they've announced the season two, and it looks like the theme is Discover.
Mm-hmm.
So for 2013-2014. And this is the youth-produced, youth-run company here out of Fayetteville.
Right.
Let's see. They have 13 The Musical,
mm-hmm.
A Charlie Brown Christmas Experiment.
Okay.
And Completely Hollywood Abridged Reduced Shakespeare Company. They have auditions if you're interested in participating on July 20th, and they're still deciding on location for that. And it's open to students 12 to 18 years old with some experience required. You know, the more the better, of course. So they're just auditioning students for all three shows that one day.
And this week, Walton Arts Center also announced they're ready with their next season. The season opener is Jersey Boys. That's September 3rd through the 8th. They'll have the musical Chicago in March. Concerts, including Roseanne Cash, the Doobie Brothers, and Mark O'Connor.
Mm-hmm.
Ramsey Lewis and John Pizzarelli will team up for their tribute to Nat King Cole. That's in April. And the 10x10 series, back for a third year, includes the L.A. Guitar Quartet, the Soweto Gospel Choir, and something called the Improvised Shakespeare Company.
Hmm.
A couple of comedians returning to the venue, Ron White and Brian Regan.
Right.
And an event titled One Man Lord of the Rings. That's February 1st.
I like these one-man things. They're
it's
usually
kind of a
really
cottage industry.
Funny.
Yes.
So I think I'm looking forward to that one. I know we just got done with Artisphere, but I was really excited to look at the Artisphere Orchestra date for Festival Orchestra for next year because it says Time for Three is going to be performing
yes.
with them.
Time for Three, who we've had in the studio.
Yeah, three guys that are classically trained but don't necessarily just do classical music.
Right.
They
I
were
bet
in the studio. And
they'll be doing all kinds of pop-up concerts next May
I bet.
And June.
There's just the three of them. Yeah. They were so much fun because I don't know much about classical music. And they came in that morning and I ended up helping with the interview for some reason. And I was just really intrigued by what they did and ended up at the concert. Ithi Agnihotri and I went and, yeah.
Oh, and I'll tell you that the full UAFS and Walton Arts Center seasons can be found right now on our blog, our KUAF blog, but you go to KUAF.com, everything that they've got there. Finally, a mea culpa. Mm-hmm. Sunday on Weekend Ozarks at Large with Christina Thomas, I said that there was no First Thursday on the Square this week because it's July 4th.
There's not.
Right. That's true. However, there is still, at the Fayetteville Underground, their first Thursday.
Oh, the artist reception that they have on
yes.
the first Thursday of the month. Okay.
That's still happening. So okay. Square, no. Underground, just off the Square, in the corner of the Square, yes. That'll be from 5 to 8, Thursday night, featuring two artists, Matt Avery from Chicago and Greg Moore, who is a member of the Underground. And they'll also have work by three other new artists in their gallery. Food and drink will still be offered. So that's happening, just nothing official on the Square.
On the Square.
Right.
The Elizabeth Richardson Center, celebrating its 50th anniversary of enhancing the lives of those with special needs, presents Beach Bingo Bash Friday, July 12th at the UARC Bowl in Fayetteville. This casual fundraiser will include bingo for prizes, beach-themed refreshments, plus live music. Tickets and more information available at 872-1800 or ercinc.org. KUAF is supported by Kumon Math and Reading Centers in Fayetteville, Lowell, and Bentonville. Kumon offers benefits that can last a lifetime. Develop skills, study habits, and the confidence to succeed in the classroom and in life. More information is available at kumon.com.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Coming up on Here and Now, the latest from the wildfire in Arizona. And can you remember all of your computer passwords? A wristband that reads your heartbeat may help you.
It knows that it's you. And then it can communicate your identity in a secure manner to devices and systems around you.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now this afternoon at 1 on KUAF.
Last week, the United States Supreme Court handed down a decision that basically threw out a core part of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Struck down was the law's formula for determining which states must get federal approval before changing election rules. Karen Trico-Stewart from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock recently spoke with John DePippa at the University of Arkansas Little Rock Law School about what last week's decision means for Arkansas.
The ruling on the Voting Rights Act was one of the biggest civil rights decisions in decades. It said special scrutiny for southern states is no longer needed today because times have changed and the legislation is based on outdated data. Arkansas was not one of the original states that, under Section 5, forces areas with a history of voter discrimination to submit to extra federal supervision. But then there's Section 3, which was not struck down. Section 3 requires preclearance in cases where judges find, or jurisdictions admit to, constitutional violations of the voting process. For example, in 1990, Arkansas was bailed in when a U.S. District Court found in the case of Jeffers v. Clinton that the state's voting laws intentionally and unconstitutionally discriminated against African Americans. So where does Arkansas stand now? For more, we asked John DePippa of the UALR Bowen School of Law.
That's a really good question because Arkansas is really in this neverland between preclearance and not. Arkansas wasn't one of the jurisdictions that originally was included in what's now the Section 4 formula that was struck down. They would require any changes whatsoever to be approved by the Justice Department before they went into effect. But in the 90s, a federal court found that Arkansas had engaged in voter discrimination and required at least some changes to be pre-cleared. And the difference is, in the jurisdictions that were originally included in the Voting Rights Act, any change at any level couldn't go into effect until the Department of Justice approved it. In Arkansas, only some of the changes done at the state level need to be pre-cleared. So the difference is really in scope. Arkansas is just a tiny fraction of its voting laws are covered by this bail-in procedure, but most of the changes in Arkansas law, and really most of the voting goes on at local and precinct level anyway, most of those changes will not be pre-cleared because they don't have to be. They can only be challenged if somebody can prove that some change in the voting procedure or some change in those local laws was done with the purpose of racial discrimination.
So the practical effect of the decision is that it took off Arkansas in some ways as, you know, having a state with jurisdictions on this preclearance list. But it didn't do away with preclearance entirely in that it leaves open litigation as a way to remedy things that someone would see as needing remedied.
Yeah, and I guess what the court did is it struck down Section 4 of the Act, which had the formula that originally determined which jurisdictions were required to get preclearance. So it said the formula was no longer valid because it wasn't up to date. But it left Section 5, which is the preclearance section, in the law. If Congress can come up with another formula that's more up to date, then it could plug that right back in, and Section 5 preclearance would go back into effect for these new jurisdictions. If that were to happen, the most likely formulas would include Arkansas. On the other part of this, the Act always has had a provision that jurisdictions that engage in racial discrimination in voting can be required by a federal court to get preclearance. And that still stays into effect. So Arkansas was never on the list to begin with. If we had a new list, they might be put on that one. But in any event, some statewide voting changes still have to be pre-approved.
Are there any insights into why Arkansas wasn't on that list and perhaps why we were different from Alabama? Yeah.
Well, the list was based on a couple statistical measures, and it measured the percentage of African Americans who were registered to vote, I believe, in 1960, and then the percentage disparity between actual turnout in the 1964 presidential election. And at that time, Arkansas had a much closer, or I should say they weren't as extreme in either of those measures as some other states. So we had a higher percentage of African Americans who had registered to vote, and our disparity in turnout wasn't so great. Now, Arkansas, like lots of other southern states, had used poll taxes and other devices, so that was really the first step to get on the list. But when you looked at those numbers in 1960 and 1964, we didn't qualify. And one of the complaints that the people who challenged this law made was that things are different now. And if you use the same formula today, you'd have different jurisdictions covered, including Arkansas, because our disparities have gotten worse since 1964, not better. And some states that are covered would be off the list because they've actually done better.
And then our listeners might next ask, well, why, any reason as to why the disparities have gotten worse here in this state?
I don't know. I mean, it could be that it's all relative, and by that I mean we looked better in the 60s compared to other places like Mississippi, for example, that had 6% of its African Americans registered to vote in the 60s. So by comparison at the time, we looked pretty good. And it might be that just that other states have made such dramatic improvements that in comparison now we don't look quite so good. But there's lots of other reasons that are really hard to explain that would explain why Arkansas might be on the list now. For whatever reason, for example, our rate of African-American voter registration has not increased as rapidly as other states. But in particular, the turnout rate of African-Americans in presidential elections is still relatively low in Arkansas compared to nationwide. And so nobody knows quite why that's so, but that would seem to be the big difference.
That was John DePippa from the University of Arkansas Little Rock Law School. He talked with Karen Trico-Stewart from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock. And still to come on this edition of Ozarks, Dr. Sanjay Gupta of CNN was in Arkansas last week. He spoke at the Clinton School of Public Service. We'll hear his thoughts on health care reform, medical journalism, and why Bill and Hillary Clinton played a role in where he is now. Plus, Antoinette has some new music she says is perfect for getting the blood pumping on a lazy morning. She reviews the latest from Bronze Radio Return, a band that will be in the region later this month. That and more ahead on Ozarks at Large. We'll be right back. This is Ozarks at Large for July 2nd, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me on the phone from New Orleans is Becca Martin Brown. Most of the time, she's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Today, she's just having a ball.
Right now, I'm exclusively yours, at least for the next couple of minutes.
Okay.
So, are you still having the beautiful weather?
We had lows in the lower 50s this morning throughout Northwest Arkansas. Unheard of for early July.
You know, I would feel envious, except I spent yesterday on a beach.
So, see, there you go.
Have you ever heard of Ship Island?
I have, yes.
It's off the coast of Gulfport, Mississippi, and it's part of the Gulf Islands National Seashore, which was established in 1971. The history of the island is fascinating because it's part of the Barrier Islands coming into the Gulf. It also was strategically significant in the War of 1812 because they found out they should have had a fort on it.
That's one of those things you don't like to find out. You kind of like to know ahead of time.
Exactly. So they started lobbying after the War of 1812, supported by the Secretary of War, a guy named Jefferson Davis, to get a fort on the island. It took them till 1859 to get it started. And then there was this little conflict called the Civil War, and the Confederates were on Ship Island. There was a battle that took, 20 minutes. Shortly thereafter, the Confederates said, there's really no point in trying to keep this island, and they went away.
Right.
And the Union, of course, held the island the rest of the war. The ship that was there and lost the 20-minute skirmish, but was also there and took over the island, was the Massachusetts.
Ah, the USS Massachusetts.
That's the reason the fort is called Fort Massachusetts. And now it's held by the U.S. government as part of the Gulf Islands National Seashore, and it is absolutely fascinating. And then you wander down to the beach, and there's this perfect white sand. I heard people around me greatly distressed that they had no iPhone service.
Which makes it a reason for many to want to go even more.
It was wonderful. So, coming up in Northwest Arkansas, there's this little thing called the 4th of July.
Yes.
And it starts tomorrow night with fireworks at Veterans Park in Rogers. Mm-hmm. Watermelon food and music start about 6:30 and fireworks about 9 and dusk, you know.
Right.
Also tomorrow night, the Celebration of Freedom, which is at the Paris High School football field, about 9 o'clock, and fireworks at 9:30 at Loch Lomond Dam in Bella Vista.
And that's
and
just
we'll
the beginning.
And we'll tell you some more of those things tomorrow.
Yeah, that's just the beginning. All right.
Yeah, we'll read more of a list tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you, Becca.
Thank you, guys. Have a wonderful day.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers and is happily on vacation.
I'm not a morning person, so sometimes getting going during the early hours of the day, even after I arrive at work, takes a little, well, work. A bit of pick-me-up music is always welcome, which is why I was grateful to discover the newest album from Bronze Radio Return last week. The title track off the band's newest record, Up, On, and Over, features an upbeat melody, a theme that runs through the album and makes this project a perfect pick-me-up album. The full-length record, which was released on the Digsyn label, features 13 tracks. The indie band from Hartford, Connecticut, solidified its lineup in 2008 and released its debut album, Old Time Speaker, in 2009. Since that time, the band has formed the habit of recording in different parts of the country. In 2011, Bronze Radio Return traveled to Norman, Oklahoma to record the follow-up album, Shake, Shake, Shake. Most recently, according to the band's website, the musicians found themselves in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains on a farm in the tiny town of Louisa, Virginia. The band's first single, Further On, has been used in the PGA Tour's national ad campaign, and the track continues the upbeat tone that starts the album.
Smoke in the sky and fire in the air. Desire burns between them. One big push is gonna get you there. Takes a stronger eye to see them. And when you see it in front of you, in a silhouette up ahead, and you see where you're going to lead your way. Sing your song, moving every day.
An official music video for this song features a young man using a pogo stick to hop from his home across a field where the band is performing to his job at a high-rise building. During shots of the band playing their instruments, lead singer Chris Henderson grins from ear to ear as he sings and rocks from side to side with his guitar. This is exactly what you can expect to see from the band at a live show, except maybe minus the field. My first experience with the group was on a small stage at Harvest Festival on Mulberry Mountain last fall. Henderson wore a smile the entire show and genuinely looked like he was having a great time. I suppose it's natural for someone who gets paid to perform to be happy about their job. And speaking of work, that idea, which is featured in the Further On music video, continues in the track Mr. Mister.
Hey, Mr. Mister, you get on my day, but you better leave my nights alone. I'm leaving in the evening, then I'll be going home. Hey, Mr. Mister, you can have my baby. I'm never yours to own. And only I miss the time when I want it. And only I so leave my night alone. I put a face on to wear through the day. It's a heavy uniform hanging on me. But here
the song refers to the balance of work with home life. The tracks All In and Thick and Thin reference a tough life at home, but a willingness to do whatever it takes to overcome the struggles. That, combined with the use of harmonica and banjo, remind me of country music, but Bronze Radio Return is another one of those bands that doesn't fit neatly into one genre. The group's website references American roots music, but the band also has a bit of a rock edge, which appears in some songs like Soon As I Fall. The guitar riff is reminiscent of something I'd expect to hear at a rock show, but the song eventually softens out a bit and finds a groove that is very Bronze Radio Return. In addition to guitar and banjo, the band utilizes keyboard, clapping, and frontman Chris Henderson's unique sounding voice to create a layered and entertainingly rhythmic sound. The group does have a couple slower, more simplistic tunes, such as the religiously reflective track Above, Below.
Up above, sitting on his throne, gates around the place he calls his home. For saints and crooks, he writes the book in every final page, every answer, every age. If what they say, what they say, what they say is true, that a spirit up above watches over you. And I wanna know what's his cue, and who is God praying to?
Up, On, and Over is full of upbeat, interesting melodies that provide a perfect soundtrack for a mundane workday that needs a little inspiration. While no one track particularly stands out, each one is just different enough that the album doesn't sound completely repetitive or uninspired. The album is available now, but if you would like to see the band perform live, they are participating in the Center of the Universe Music Festival July 20th in Tulsa. More information is available at bronzeradioreturn.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is a Tuesday edition of Ozarks at Large. Some publishing notes.
Yes.
To pass along. The University of Arkansas Press has published All In, Expanding Access Through Nationally Competitive Awards, edited by Suzanne McRae, who is Vice Provost for Enrollment and the Director of the Nationally Competitive Awards at the University of Arkansas. All In is described as helping readers navigate the ultra-competitive world of national and international scholarships. If you're so inclined and can qualify for them, it sounds like a handy
book
to have.
This book will help you, absolutely. Yes. There's a book signing for a book that has been in the works since 1996. University of Arkansas Fort Smith, the first 85 years. There will be a signing for that on July 30th.
And there are three different writers.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's been, what, 17 years they've been writing the history of the...
Sure.
I mean, what's happened since they started writing? Well, it's changed names.
Right.
I think it was still West Ark in 96.
I think so.
I think it was. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it changed in, like, I want to say 99.
I'm not quite sure.
But, yeah.
Yes. And 6 million airline passengers all over the world will have discovered, beginning yesterday, a 64-page section of U.S. Airways magazine that's focused solely on Northwest Arkansas. That means every one of those magazines on a U.S. air flight. And I've seen the digital copy. I haven't seen the actual.
I've seen the digital copy. Physical. 64 seems like a lot. Is that normal?
I don't know if it's normal, but I certainly know that I have looked, depending on the airline, at their magazine, and there have been large spreads on Seattle and Austin and Santa Fe. Mm-hmm. And I remember one that seemed very long about Madison and Milwaukee, Wisconsin a few years ago.
I guess I don't fly often enough for me to notice these things.
I just look, and I've often wondered if they did one on where I was from, what would it include? And it's got a lot.
It looked really good. And something you and I were talking about earlier is I know the people that wrote it, or at least recognize the authors, and they're from here, which I thought was really nice because I always wondered when people wrote, you mentioned, you know, you've wondered when people write this, is it someone from
U.S. Airways magazine?
Yeah, from Chicago or New York or whatever. Is it someone who's actually from there? So I don't know. I felt reassured that it was written by somebody who is from here, has lived here, knows the area.
It's these magazines, you know, it's a monthly magazine, so every U.S. air flight will have them in the back of the seats, and they estimate 6 million people, and it's the July issue. I don't have a scheduled flight in July, so if someone can take one off the plane, because that's allowed. You're not stealing. They want you to carry it with you.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, I've always carried them with me.
Oh.
And you want to bring one to us, we'd like to see it in the physical form as well.
See, I always thought it was like the magazines in a lobby of, like, the doctor's office. It's to be shared with everybody. I didn't realize I could take one and they replace it.
Yeah. That's what they do when you deplane. They come in, they pick up the trash, and they throw in a new issue if you've taken yours with you.
I would have known that would have been really helpful a couple of places I've been.
Well, now you know. Next time, take the magazine.
On it. And just wanted to remind you once more about the book about University of Arkansas Fort Smith, the first 85 years. That's July 30th. It's from 5 to 7 at UAFS, which is located at 2nd Street.
Oh, it's going to be at the 2nd Street venue, which is now owned by the University of Arkansas Fort Smith.
Okay.
It used to be 2nd Street Live. And
right,
now
and now it's okay.
Yeah,
on it.
Downtown.
Yes, so 5 to 7 on July 30th.
We'll remind you again between now and the end of the month. How's that?
Sounds good.
Chances are you haven't heard a concerto for piano, accordion, piano, and strings. Hi, I'm Katie Hendrickson, host of Off Note, which airs the best in classical music Monday through Friday from 11 to noon on KUAF. Join me Wednesday to hear a concerto for piano, accordion, piano, and strings from composer Michael Easton. That's coming up Wednesday from 11 to noon on Of Note.
Dr. Sanjay Gupta is one of the most recognizable faces on CNN and one of the most recognizable medical journalists anywhere. Last week, he came to Arkansas to speak at the Clinton School for Public Service. During his time in the state, he sat down with Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas.
I've met a lot of people in healthcare, particularly hospitals, nursing homes, community health centers, very enthusiastic about the Affordable Care Act and some of the, quite frankly, some of the financial benefits that it may bring to them. A lot of folks in the medical community not so thrilled about some of the changes that are coming because I guess they're anticipating more red tape and bureaucracy. What's your read on how this will be received by those groups?
I think, you know, for the medical community, I think there's sort of the predominant groups are either they don't fully understand it, and there's a lot to understand here. You know, there's over 2,000 pages of various things. The second group, and I think this is a very fair depiction, is that it's their lives really aren't going to change that much. So the trepidation, I think, is probably not that well founded. If you really say, okay, what is it that you're specifically concerned about? I think the answers start to get pretty vague. I think there are a couple of pressing issues, and one is that you don't have enough doctors, and that's not a small problem. Right now, there's already probably 15,000 to 20,000 primary care doctor shortage, and I think that's going to get exacerbated as you get more people entering the system. But I think for the vast majority of physicians who are practicing now, I don't think a lot's going to really change for them. I think they're going to have, they may have more patients. They certainly have more patients who have health care insurance.
You're one of the most well-known and well-respected people in the medical profession who has a media platform to talk about a lot of these issues. Do you think there need to be more Sanjay Guptas in the world that are out there talking about what's going on with a media presence like you have built?
Yeah, there's a huge appetite for this. All aspects, I think, of medical health and wellness sort of content. I think clearly people want it, and part of it, interestingly, maybe driven by the fact that there's been a increasing skepticism of the medical system overall, which again, some of that well-founded, some of it not so well-founded. But I think people want knowledge in this area. Certainly on how to take care of themselves, like the best way to care for themselves and care for their families. And I don't think people, want to be ill. They want to be able to prevent these diseases. But I think, I do it for a large international news network. I think more and more people are gathering this knowledge in different ways. I think, the way that I give it, I think it's not, I don't know how long it'll last. I mean, I sort of have to predict what a wide swath of the country will be interested in any given time. It's hard. I think as you can start to drill down on particular groups of people, either surrounding conditions like diabetes or surrounding demographics like, moms who are trying to make healthcare decisions for their kids, I think that's going to be far more important probably, the next several years.
So really more localized and personalized in terms of that connection.
Yeah, and I think that personalization is something we can't do on, the platform that I have. And you wouldn't want to be prescriptive in that regard. But I think as you get more localized, you can offer some. I always make a distinction between information and knowledge. I think information is plentiful. I mean, there's a lot of it out there, but it's hard to distill. It's hard to really wade through that, especially when it comes to medical. I mean, because you. It's important. I mean, you don't want, you have to trust it in order to act on it. But I think as there's a closer connection between the people who are providing that knowledge, which is contextualized information, and the people who are gathering it and craving it, I think you can become more prescriptive and probably more helpful.
You probably didn't start at CNN. A lot of people kind of worked their way up the food chain. How did you get your big break? I'm not sure if I know that story.
Some of it is related to the man here. I worked at the White House as a White House fellow in 97, 98. And I was very interested in healthcare at that time. This is post 94. So this is 3 years after the healthcare plan in 94. But clearly there was still a lot of inertia around that, especially in the office of the First Lady. And that's where I worked. It's funny. There's little things now, and I, in fact, working on the speech a little bit made me reflect on some of that, just a little, because I wrote speeches on some healthcare topics, and just how the questions that either the president or the first lady would ask as we were going through the speech ahead of time, how to take something. We had the data right. We knew that we got the substance of it right on, accurate. We spent a lot of time. But then, you know, it was a question of making people care about it. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's public health is comprised of those two qualities. It's got to be the right message, and and people got to hear that right message. And so I think I learned a lot of that from working at the White House and working on those speeches and going through, as I call it, oral boards with the First Lady when we were going through speeches. She had great questions always on these things. But pragmatically, what happened was a guy who worked at CNN, was CEO of CNN, Tom Johnson, worked at the White House himself in the Johnson administration, Lyndon Johnson administration, and he used to hang around the White House, you know, it's late 90s again, and he and I met at that time, and he was interested in building a medical unit at CNN. There were other news organizations that had medical units, but CNN really didn't have one, and he wanted to know if I would be involved with that at that time, which was very nebulous and ill-defined, and I wasn't really that interested. So, you know, I went back and was practicing, you know, for 4 or 5 years, and then I moved to Atlanta to chase one of my mentors down. He became chairman of the program down there, and I literally ran into this guy in an airport. I hadn't seen him in 5 or 6 years, and Tom, Sanjay, you know, and then we started talking again, and he said, come visit CNN. And I did, and he said, you know, I was going to do some commentary on healthcare policy for the first year of the first term of George W. Bush's presidency, 2001 August, and that's when I sort of started. In 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks after I started, the attacks of 9/11 happened. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, you know, it was suddenly a very divergent path I never anticipated or could have predicted.
Dr. Sanjay Gupta is the chief medical correspondent for CNN and was in Arkansas last week and talked to Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The 15th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series welcomes American bebop and jazz pianist, composer, and singer Bob Doro to Walton Arts Center's Star Theater Saturday, July 13th. He's worked with Miles Davis and Allen Ginsberg and is the voice and composer of songs used in Schoolhouse Rock. More information, waltonartscenter.org or KUAF.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Mena.
Today is the middle of the year. As many days on one side of July 2nd as there are ahead.
Really?
Yep. We are in the exact middle of the year.
I don't know how I feel about that. I think that makes me sad.
No.
Because the year's half over.
But there's...
Glasses half empty.
Right. No.
All that.
But who knows what's ahead? It's time for
winter.
Celebration.
Don't like winter.
Well, there is time between now and winter.
Sure.
But there's the World Series yet to go.
Yeah.
There's gridiron for you. There's all sorts of things still ahead.
Yeah.
All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We'll be back with you tomorrow at noon and 7.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.